The following is a presentation of Remnant.
Hey, this is Jeremiah from Remnant Church. You know, we want you to be encouraged and filled with hope through your experience as you listen in. This life can be complicated, even confusing, but it's our hope that you catch a glimpse of God's unconditional love for you and His purpose for your life. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to a message from Pastor Jeremiah Vick.
Excited that you're here this morning. I'm excited about our series. This has been really cool to kind of dig into the names of God and just kind of see what God wants to reveal to us each week about Himself. And, you know, we mentioned at the beginning of the series that there's over 930 names and titles for God. That is a lot. And so technically, this series should last us for the next 7 years, but we're not going to do that to you. But what I find as we look at the names of God, I discover that there's different places throughout the narrative of the Bible. There's different places where God speaks to people in certain ways, where God deals with people in certain situations. And it's like in each one of those situations, God continues to just show something else about Himself and how He relates to us. And generally, when God does that, a new name or title for God pops up. And then it'll reappear in other places in the Bible. And so I love just kind of like tracking the stories as we go along. And I already mentioned this morning, this story is going to be a lot of fun because it just involves like some real life stuff. And we'll kind of get into that in a little bit. But I love that as we follow these stories and as God reveals Himself, did you know that maybe to one person in the Bible, God may reveal Himself in several different ways? And so in different stages and different phases of their life and their journey with Him, God would reveal Himself in a different way. And I believe God still does that today. I believe God does that with us. I believe that as we journey along in our relationship with Him, in certain moments, God shows Himself to us. And there's things about God that come to light. And there's things about us that come to light as well. Some of the names and titles that we're going to be talking about are actually names and titles that other people gave God because of His dealing with them. And obviously God put those names in the scripture, and so we know that those are titles that God accepts. But it's just interesting to me that when God does something in someone's life, it's like they feel, God, I'm going to give you this title because this is the area of my life that you touched, that you took care of. And I believe that as we share in this relationship with God and as God continues to reveal Himself to us and show us things about Himself, I believe that we can do the same thing. We can put titles of honor on God because of the way God moves in our lives. And we're going to see that this morning. So as I mentioned, the title of my message this morning is God is El Rai. So the hashtags this morning, El Rai, that's a shorter hashtag than we usually have, so that'll be a lot easier for you guys. And then the hashtag identification at Jeremiah Vick at Remnant Church. Why do we give you guys the hashtags and the Twitter handles and all that? Because we would like you guys to tweet and Instagram and Facebook the things that you hear that God shows you at Remnant, because we feel like God has something to give to everybody. And so you may have a friend going through a tough time, going through a moment, and they may see something that you post and recognize that God is in that. And so that's why we encourage you to do that. We're probably one of the few churches that I know of that encourage you to take your cell phone out during the message, right? It's like we're like most, we visited a church not too long ago that had like a warning on the screen that was like, do not, make sure your phones are on silent, you know. Cell phone use is prohibited. It's like sounded like a warning, like they were going to send like some security guard after you and kick you out if you did that. But we don't do that here at Remnant. We encourage you to. Some of you guys, how many of you guys use your Bible on your phone as like use the app on your phone? All right, I've seen people do that, and I haven't done that myself because maybe it's just my fingers and scrolling and stuff. Sometimes I get lost when I'm trying to. So you'll rarely find me communicating with you with an electronic device. I know Jerry's got a good handle on using the iPad, but for me, I just feel like the wrong finger would just erase everything or send someone somewhere where I couldn't find it, and then I'd be lost. So I do have my Bible with me, though. So pretty old school, but That's how I roll. This morning, I'm going to be looking into a passage that, here's the beautiful thing about the Bible. The Bible doesn't like sugarcoat the story, okay? It's not like the event happens and then God's like, how can we clean this up to where people are going to want to read this and it's really going to be a beautiful story for them. Have you noticed that people do that on social media? Like on Facebook and on Instagram, and they take a snapshot of their life, you know, and then you see like this beautiful moment that someone else is having, and you're like, oh man, my life sucks, right? You're like, how come I couldn't experience that? And what you don't realize is that they're sharing with you like one or two highlights out of their week. And the reality is that for us, it's like we have to experience every moment, and so there's bad moments. There's boring moments, there's sad moments, there's all this stuff that goes on, and it's like we compare all the junk in our lives, the mess, with someone else's Instagram moment that's beautiful, right? And we're just like, oh man, my life stinks, their life is perfect. But the reality is, I mean, we kind of portray what we want people to see, what we want people to believe about us. Isn't that the way it happens? It's like we try to create these beautiful moments so that we can share it with the world, and it's like our lives are so sad, but we try to make it look so good, and then we're jealous of everybody else. And truth is, they have the same sad life, and we just don't realize it. So like I was saying, I'm when I open the Word of God and I read these stories, these narratives, I say to myself, you know, God, I'm so glad that you didn't like cut out the non-Instagrammy parts. Right? The parts that people wouldn't post on social media. It's like you leave all that junk in there, and so we can learn from it. So this morning, we're going to be looking at the book of Genesis. Before we do that, I want to get into the name El Ra'i, because I want to kind of give you guys a little bit of insight into what this name means. So we have the name El Ra'i. It's comes from two different words. The word El, so whenever you see the word El, E-L, it refers to the name of God, okay? And it's significant because El stands for God's might, strength, and power. So God's might, strength, and his power comes out in the name El. And then Ra'i just simply means to see or to perceive or to consider. So the name El Ra'i means the God of seeing. The God of seeing, or the strong one who sees me. So we're going to read a story where a young lady discovers that God sees her, that God notices her. And let me kind of set this story up for you guys, because here's the thing. Abraham, as you know, God said, you're going to be the father of many nations. You're going to be the father of this amazing legacy. You're going to have many descendants. And so Abraham and his wife Sarah, they had one small problem. They didn't have any kids. And they were getting up there in age, and they were getting worried about this. And so they were a little bit kind of in the panic mode. And God had promised that they would have descendants. And they were like, it's not happening, God. What's the deal? Things are not going the way you said they were going to go. And although on one level they trusted God that he was going to come through, but on the other hand, they were human, and they were like stressing out. And so this story comes out of a mistake that Abraham and Sarah make in their panickiness to try to help God along, okay? You know, we do that sometimes. God's not moving fast enough, and we're like, God, can you use a little help? Because I certainly think I could advance this better than you. And so this is a situation with what Abraham and Sarah does. So let's read the story. Genesis 16, we'll read verses 1 through 11 first, and then we'll jump into a couple more verses here. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had not been able to bear children for him, but she had an Egyptian servant named Hagar. So Sarai said to Abram, the Lord has prevented me from having children. Go and sleep with my servant. Perhaps I can have children through her. And Abraham agreed with Sarah's proposal. Okay, I want to just pause right there, because some of you guys are like, what's going on here? Some Mari Povich stuff going on, right? What just happened, okay? So they can't have kids? So Sarah's like, hey, I got a great idea. We got this maid. So why don't you just sleep with her, and we'll have kids, and we'll call it our kid, right? Okay, so that sounds bizarre, right? Like a terrible idea, but actually, not that it's a good idea, but actually it was very much a part of the culture that they lived in, because when it became apparent that a family was not going to continue a legacy through their descendants, then they would resort to this method. And especially in wealthier families, this was like kind of the thing that they did. And the wife was unable to have kids, and she had a handmaid, usually a servant, someone that cared for like her every need. And for some reason, this handmaid was offered up as the baby mama. Okay, so that's how things were back then. That was like one of the things. Now, here's the thing that you need to understand is that sometimes, just because something is okay and the culture approves of it, and even like people that we respect in our life approves of it, doesn't always mean that it's God's plan for our life. It doesn't always mean that it's the right choice just because it's acceptable, it's legal, people approve of it, okay? Very, very important for you guys to know this, because you'll see what happens out of this story. Okay, Abram agreed with Sarah's proposal. So Sarah, Abram's wife, took Hagar, the Egyptian servant, and gave her to Abram as a wife. This happened 10 years after Abram had settled the land of Canaan. So Abram had sexual relations with Hagar, and she became pregnant. But when Hagar knew she was pregnant, she began to treat her mistress, Sarah, with contempt. Okay, so the drama's already started, right? She finds out she's pregnant, and now she's like acting like she's better than her or something. Then Sarah said to Abram, "This is all your fault." Wow. Okay. Tables turn pretty quick, huh? "I put my servant into your arms, but now that she's pregnant, she treats me with contempt. The Lord will show you who's wrong, you or me." She's like, even God knows who's wrong. That's awesome. Abram replied, "Look, she is your servant, so deal with her as you see fit." Then Sarah treated Hagar so harshly that she finally ran away. Okay, so she's treating her pretty bad, and Hagar's finally like, "I'm out of here." The angel of the Lord found Hagar beside a spring of water in the wilderness along the road to Shur. Now, I'm going to stop right here, because I want you guys to know something, that when you're reading along the story in the Bible and the angel of the Lord, this character comes into the scene, this always refers to Jesus. Jesus was referred to in the Old Testament as the angel of the Lord. So when you see that expression, we're talking about God actually appearing. So it's not just an angel that God sent, but it's actually God himself. Then the angel said to Hagar, Sarah's servant, "Where have you come from and where are you going?" "I'm running away from my mistress, Sarah," she replied. The angel of the Lord said to her, "Return to your mistress and submit to her authority." Then he added, "I will give you more descendants than you can count." And the angel also said, "You are now pregnant and will give birth to a son, and you are to name him Ishmael," which means God hears, "for the Lord has heard your cry of distress." So now we have this situation where Hagar is running away from home. She's running away from Sarah because things are getting bad. Things are getting tough. The drama's pretty hot, right? And so as she runs away, God meets her. And God speaks into her life and begins to tell her things. And one of the things he tells her is that you need to go back. "I'm going to bless you. And the son that you're going to have, I've already picked out a name for him. And he's going to be a major player as well." Player as in he's going to play an important role, not as in he's going to be a player, right? You know what I'm talking about. Or maybe you don't. I don't know. But look at verse 13 and 14. Here's where it happens. Verse 13 and 14. "Thereafter, Hagar used another name to refer to the Lord. She said, 'You are El Rai, the God who sees me.' She also said, 'Have I truly seen the one who sees me?' So that well was named Bir Lahai Rai," which means beer's, you know, yeah, well, anyway. It's there's a lot of names that start with the word beer. It means well of the living one who sees me. So she names this place, this well that she was by, she names it the well of the living one who sees me. and it can still be found between Kadesh and Bered. So I want you to notice something right up front. Amidst all the drama, amidst all the garbage, amidst all the arguments and the craziness that's going down, this little love triangle that's going on, okay? And all of that junk that's happening, God is paying attention. And when Sarah has gone off on her own, God notices her. And this is the first thing that I want you guys to see in this story and recognize this truth for yourself is that God takes notice of you. God takes notice of you. Very important. Look what it says in verse 13. You are El Rai, the God who sees me. Hagar says, this is the most important thing about God in my life right now, the fact that God notices me. God knows who I am. I mean something to God. I matter to God. Have you ever had a little kid clamoring for your attention? You know, I mean, kids, they want you to see everything they do because they're proud of everything they do, even though sometimes you go to see what they're bugging you about and you want to, you know, you're thinking, oh, this is going to be good, right? If you have kids, you know by now, it's probably not going to be that great. But they're so excited about it, right? They're so excited. They're like, oh, you got to see this. Come see this. Come see this. And then you go in the room and you just got to prepare yourself to be underwhelmed, right? And you're just like, oh, cool. Awesome. You know, sometimes you have to act a little more excited than you really are. But kids just want your attention. They just want to be noticed, right? They want you to see what's going on with them. And the same thing is true for us with God. We want God to notice us. We want God to see what's happening in our lives, and we want to be visible to God. We want God's attention to be on us. We want God to be focused on our lives. And that is why Hagar, it meant so much to her that God noticed her, that she began to call God El Rai, the God who sees me. And here's the thing about God that we need to understand that comes out of this idea that God sees us. There's a thing called omniscience that is an attribute of God. Omniscience. Omniscience means all-knowing, the state of having total knowledge, the quality of knowing everything. That is what it means to be omniscient. So God knows everything. Nothing gets away from God. God doesn't miss anything. It's not like something happens and God's like, wait a second, rewind. I missed that. I didn't see what happened. God doesn't miss anything. Nothing gets by him. And that means three things for us. First, God sees your actions. God sees your actions. Everything you do in full visibility of God. Second thing, God sees your situation. Whatever place you find yourself in, whatever circumstance you've mattered to get yourself into, God sees your situation. And third, God sees your heart. God sees your heart. And I feel like this is the most important one because in addition to God knowing what you're doing, God knowing what situation you're in, God actually sees your desires, your motives, your intents of your heart. Proverbs 5 verse 21 says, "For the Lord sees clearly what a man does, examining every path he takes." Hebrews 4:13 tells us, "Nothing in all creation is hidden from God. Everything is naked and exposed before his eyes, and he is the one to whom we are accountable." Proverbs 15:3 tells us, "The Lord is watching everywhere, keeping his eye on both the evil and the good." You ever feel like, you know, someone has done something wrong and you're just like, man, God, why didn't you see what happened? Why didn't you notice that? Why aren't you? And we feel like if God's not acting the way we want him to act, or God's not responding to a situation the way we want him to respond, then we think that maybe God didn't notice what happened. We think somehow God overlooked it because he's not responding the way we would. Psalms 44 verse 21 said, "God knows the secrets of every heart." This may very well be one of the scariest verses in the Bible. Because guess what? Well, you don't even have to guess. Our hearts can be pretty nasty. And by heart, we're talking about the center of who you are. Okay, so you've got a lot of things wrapped up in your heart. You've got your thoughts. You've got your passions, your desires. You've got your emotions. All those things are wrapped up in this idea of your heart. And God sees it all. He doesn't miss a single thing. In fact, nothing escapes God's attention. And once you truly grasp this, it will shape everything you think and do. Because when you understand, when you truly understand that God sees your actions, your situation, and your heart, that truth will affect the way you live. That truth will affect the things you say and the things you do. Here's the deal. We live in like this imaginary world where we think that God doesn't know some things. Okay? And you could say everything you want, or you can learn as much as you can about God and God being all-knowing, and you could still somehow picture yourself in a situation where God's not going to see what you're doing. You guys ever heard that song, "Be careful, little ears, what you hear. Be careful, little hands, what you do"? It's like a little kid's song. That when I was in Sunday school as a little kid, anybody know what Sunday school is? It kind of goes way back, and you get up early and go to Sunday school, and they would sing that song, and it used to freak me out as a kid, because I'm just like, what? God sees everything when I'm in the bathtub? You know, I'm like, God knows everything that I do. God knows that I do it, and I would be freaked out by that. You should be freaked out by that, too. That should be something that is a little bit unsettling for you, especially if you're doing some things and saying some things that you know brings God dishonor. To know that everything you say, everything that you do is visible before the living God. That should shape who we are. That thought alone, that fact alone should have some impact on the way we live. Knowing that God sees everything and that God knows us that intimately. Can you imagine if a person in your life knew everything you said and everything you did? Just one person in your life, what would you do with that person? Avoid them like the plague, right? try to scheme up their demise, right? I mean, you would be pretty embarrassed and ashamed if there was one person in your life that knew everything about you. Because even the person that's closest to you, even the most intimate relationship you have in your life, that person still does not know everything about you. There are still things that you keep hidden from that person, but not from God. You can't hide anything from God. Nothing. It's all in clear view of God. We need to understand that because it really does change who we are and the way we behave. The second thing that I want you guys to see here in Hagar's story is that God pursues you when you're lost. God pursues you when you're lost. Look at verse 7. It says, "The angel of the Lord found Hagar beside a spring of water in the wilderness along the road to Shur." So here we have God finding Hagar. And the word, it's interesting, the word that's used here in the Hebrew, the word "found" actually means to attain something that's lost or misplaced. Have you ever felt lost or misplaced? You ever felt like, I don't belong here? I feel like somehow God made a mistake and he put me someplace where I don't belong. I feel like I've been misplaced. And so this idea that God goes to the person that feels misplaced and lost and says, "I found you. I found you." And it's even more interesting, the place that he found Hagar. So I'm doing a little bit of studying. I'm here. Okay, she's in this place on the road to this place called Shur. And what does the word Shur, the name Shur, mean? The name Shur means the wall. And I started thinking about this. I'm like, man, Hagar, she really literally has her back up against the wall. She's really in a place where she's just like, I have nowhere else to turn. She feels trapped. She feels lost. She feels hopeless. And that is where God meets her. And my friend, the same is true for you. I don't know what your situation is right now. I don't know what you're running away from. I don't know what drama is going in your life that has driven you to the place where you're at right now. But if you're like Hagar and you have your back up against the wall, God sees you. He knows your situation. He knows exactly what's going on in your life. You're not alone in that place, just like Hagar was not alone in the place where God found her. Psalms 139, verses 1 through 3 says, O Lord, you have examined my heart and know everything about me. You know when I sit down or stand up. You know my thoughts, even when I'm far away. You see me when I travel and when I rest at home. You know everything I do. I love this story that Jesus tells in Matthew. You know, Jesus told some pretty incredible parables, and sometimes he would tell a parable, and the people around him would be like, what? I know, I don't get it. Tell us again or explain it. And oftentimes, Jesus would explain his parable. But I love in this story, there's really no explaining that needs to happen. Matthew 18, verses 12 through 14, he says, if someone has 100 sheep and one of them wanders off, doesn't he leave the 99 and go after the one? And if he finds it, does he make far more over it than over the 99 who stay put? In other words, when he finds that lost sheep, doesn't he make a big deal out of it when he finds that which is lost? Your Father in heaven feels the same way. He doesn't want to lose even one of his little ones. I love this picture because, you know, at some point during this series, we're probably going to talk about Jesus being the good shepherd. And I love the fact that Jesus is not going to let even one of us get away. He's not going to let even one of us wander off and get lost and get confused and feel misplaced and hopeless. So if you're in that place, if you're in that place where you feel misplaced, hopeless, you're back up against the wall, guess what? Jesus is right there with you. God, the good shepherd is right there with you. He's not going to let you wander off. He's going to bring you back. In fact, in despair, hopelessness, or loneliness, you can know that your Father sees you and wants to bring you back to safety. That's what we discover through Hagar's story. You know, this wasn't the first time, or this wasn't the only time that Hagar was off in the wilderness. So I'm reading through the story of Hagar. I'm kind of interested in her life because it's like, you know, these are the kind of stories where there's like a lot of stuff going on. There's a lot of mess. There's a lot of drama. There's a lot of heartache going on. And I'm reading down through her story. And it turns out that when Abraham and Sarah do have a son named Isaac, once again, the drama starts to happen. This is in Genesis 21, verses 8 through 19. It says, when Isaac grew up and was about to be weaned, Abraham prepared a huge feast to celebrate the occasion. But Sarah saw Ishmael, you know who Ishmael is, right? The son of Abraham and her Egyptian servant Hagar. So she sees Ishmael making fun of her son Isaac. Now, Ishmael probably at this time is about anywhere between 8 to 10 years old. You have an 8 to 10-year-old in your house, maybe you do. We have a 6-year-old, going to be 7, in our house. I noticed something about kids. They make fun of each other. Have you noticed that too? It's not very nice, but they do it. It happens. And so kids, as they say, will be kids. But Sarah takes it pretty personal. She's like, you know what? My son Isaac is special. We waited a long time for this kid. I went through all this drama, and now I got my own kid. And now your little kid, your little boy, is coming along, and he's going to make fun of my kid? Is that how it's going to go? So she turned to Abraham and demanded, get rid of that slave woman and her son. Notice her language, right? It's like at one point she's like, oh, here's my beautiful handmaid. Abraham, why don't you just take her and you can have a baby with her? You know, and it's like gets worse. And now she's like, that slave, that Egyptian slave, get rid of her. We don't want her anymore. This upset Abram very much, verse 11, because Ishmael was his son. I think Sarah may have forgotten that fact. Wait a second here. Ishmael is also Abram's son. But God told Abraham, do not be upset over the boy and your servant. Do whatever Sarah tells you, for Isaac is the son through whom your descendants will be counted. But I will also make a nation of the descendants of Hagar's son, because he's your son too. By the way, the Arab nations come through Ishmael. So Abraham got up early the next morning, prepared food and a container of water, and strapped them on Hagar's shoulders. Then he sent her away with their son, and she wandered aimlessly in the wilderness of Beersheba. When the water was gone, she put the boy in the shade of a bush. Then she went and sat down by herself about 100 yards away. I don't want to watch the boy die, she said, as she burst into tears. But God heard the boy crying. What was the boy's name again? Ishmael. What did the name Ishmael mean? God hears. God heard the boy crying as he lied there. And the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven. Hagar, what's wrong? Do not be afraid. God has heard the boy crying as he lies there. Go to him and comfort him, for I will make a great nation from his descendants. So here we have, once again, God finding Hagar in this lonely, desolate place. And he says, Hagar, what happened this time? What's wrong? He says, you know what? I heard your boy crying. And I want you to go to him and I want you to comfort him. For I will make a great nation from his descendants. And then, verse 19, and then God opened Hagar's eyes and she saw a well full of water. She quickly filled her water container and gave the boy a drink. You know what I love about this story? Hagar finds herself in a very similar situation. And once again, God meets her there. How many times have you gotten yourself into the same kind of problem, the same kind of trouble, the same circumstance? Because of something you did, because of a decision you made, a path that you went down, you end up in the same place where you've been before. And you arrive at that place and you're just like, God can't forgive me. God's not going to meet me here. I've been here before. I've already screwed this up once before, and now I'm in the same place. That doesn't matter to God. God still sees you. God still notices you. Matter of fact, take this with you from this passage, this story about Hagar. God sees you in your distress. God sees you in your distress. It doesn't matter how many times you end up in that same situation, God is still going to meet you there. And God's still going to be offering you a way out. God's still going to offer you forgiveness. He's still going to offer you his hand. We need to understand this, guys, because you know what happens? We make bad choices and we end up in the same place and we start to give up on ourselves. We start to give up on life and the way we thought things should go. Plan A didn't work out. Plan B didn't work out. Plan C, we're like on plan Z at this point. And guess what? God is still there. God is still very much a part of your life. God hasn't forgotten you. God hasn't ignored you. You haven't gone unnoticed by God. God still sees you. No matter what your situation is, no matter how many times you've been in that place. Look what he says to Hagar in verse 17. the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said, Hagar, what's wrong? Hagar, do not be afraid. Guess what? You may be in the wilderness again. You may be experiencing those feelings of despair and loneliness and lost. But I'm still here. I haven't left your side. I'm still here. The psalmist says this in Psalm 56, verse 8. You know how troubled I am. You have counted my tears. You ever been crying and just wondered if God noticed your tears? The Bible says that God not only noticed your tears, but he's keeping track of them. Psalms 103, verse 13 says, the Lord is like a father to his children, tender and compassionate to those who fear him. By fear, it means respect. God treats us like a son or a daughter because we are his children. 1 Peter 5, 7 tells us, give all your worries and cares to God, for he cares about what happens to you. You find yourself in a place like Hagar. You feel outcast, you feel rejected, you feel lost, hopeless. See, I don't know what your story is. I don't know what kind of crazy decisions and drama in your life has brought you to the place where you're at today, but I do know this. I know that God sees you in your distress. And God has a word for you in the place where you're at. First thing he wants to ask you is, what's wrong? Tell me about it. Tell me what's wrong. Tell me what's going on. And then he wants to remind you, there's no reason to be afraid. There's no reason to worry. I'm right here with you. See, God knows your feelings and frustrations. He's seen the crisis in your heart and your soul. And there's no hurt that goes unnoticed by God. He knows exactly what you're going through. Every pain, every emotion, every feeling of hopelessness and despair, God sees it all. He knows exactly what you're going through. And here's the best part of this story, is that in God seeing all of this, there's one other thing that God sees. God sees what's best for you. God sees what's best for you. And the cool thing is, he's ready to reveal it to you. He's ready to show it to you. And the first time Hagar was in the wilderness, in verse 9 of chapter 16, it says, the angel of the Lord said to her, return to your mistress and submit to her authority. At that point, in that place, in Hagar's life, the best plan for her life, the best thing for her to do, was to go back and submit to the authority of Sarah. For some of us, God's instructions are the same. The best plan, the best situation in our life, no matter how bad and crazy things have gone, the best plan for you is to go back and make things right. Go back. Make things right with the people around you. Whatever situation, whatever drama led you to that place, don't run away from it. Go back and take care of business. Do what you have to do. And know that God's going to go with you. And then the second time Hagar finds herself in the wilderness, God sees what's best for her in that situation too. And she tells her to go to Ishmael, go to him, comfort him, for I will make a great nation for his descendants. And now God reveals to her this beautiful plan that she couldn't see in the wilderness when she was lost and when she was hurting and when she felt hopeless. But God said, I have this incredible plan for your life. Your son Ishmael is going to be the father of this great nation. He's going to have many descendants. In other words, Hagar, your story does not end here in the wilderness. Your story does not end here lost and hurting and in despair. And God is saying the same thing to you this morning. Guys, your story does not end and that hopeless place that you find yourself in. Your story does not end in a lost and hopeless place, because God wants to show you this incredible plan that he has for your life. Romans 8, 27 through 28 says, he knows us far better than we know ourselves. He knows our pregnant condition, and he keeps us present before God. That's why we can be so sure that every detail in our lives of love for God is worked into something good. So not only does God have this intimate knowledge of who you are and what you're up to, but God also has this beautiful plan for your life. And I don't think there's any other verse that says it better than Jeremiah 29:11. Reading it from the Message, it says, God says, I know what I'm doing. I have it all planned out, plans to take care of you, not abandon you, plans to give you the future you hope for. Guys, I don't know what situation you find yourself in. I don't know where you're at today. I don't know if you're like Hagar and you're running away from a problem. I don't know if you're like Hagar and you've been rejected and you've been kicked out and you've been marginalized. I don't know where you find yourself, but I do know this. God sees you. God sees you. And not only does God see you and understand what you're going through, but God has this incredible plan for your life. God has this beautiful plan for your life, and he just wants you to look up to him so he can reveal it to you. See, because God is all-seeing, all-knowing, and he knows you better than you know yourself, you can trust that his way is the best plan for you. There's not a single person on earth that I would rather take instruction from than God. Because God already knows. He's seen it. He's written it in his word. He said, I have this plan for you. It's already laid out. I've already spent my time and my energy on this plan for your life. I just want you to see it. I just want you to surrender to me and step into this beautiful plan that I have for you. So no matter where you find yourself, you may find yourself along that road that Hagar sat with your back against the wall. You may find yourself in a wilderness, your soul parched and thirsty. God knows exactly where you're at. He sees everything. And he's right there to pull you close to him and to show you a beautiful plan that he has for your life. Are you ready to let go of your situation? Are you ready to say, I can't do this, God. I need you to find me. I need you to see me. I need you to bring hope into my life. See, that's the story of Hagar. But I don't think her story is unlike ours. I think our lives are a lot like that. We have very few Instagram moments, if you know what I mean. There's just a lot of junk in our lives that's happening. And God is in and through all of that, and he still wants to be close to you. Nothing goes unnoticed by God. He is El Rai, the mighty one who sees you. Would you bow your heads with me this morning?
You've been listening to a presentation of Remnant. For more information, visit us at remnantchurchonline.com.